Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for Catholic News. My name is Chris Mihalik. The source of our program is denvercatholic.org. The Works of the Father, How Jesus Teaches Us to Live, by Jared Stout. God has appointed us to bear fruit. In the spiritual life, it can be hard to judge whether we are blossoming or wilting, so often trapped in isolated thoughts and feelings. Jesus, however, stands as our model, and he let us know how we could evaluate his own life, coming to know him through his works. If I am not doing the works of my Father, then do not believe me. But if I do them, even though you do not believe me, believe the works, that you may know and understand that the Father is in me, and I am in the Father, John chapter 10, verses 37 through 38. Jesus can be recognized as the one who does the works of the Father, but what are these works? As Jesus implies in his statement from John's Gospel, his works manifest who he is through tangible expression. This is the very purpose of the Incarnation, that the Word of the Father could speak into this dark world in an embodied way that we could grasp. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, full of grace and truth. We have beheld his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father. No one has ever seen God, the only Son who is in the bosom of the Father. He has made him known, John 1, 14 and 18. In John 10, Jesus assumes we would already have seen his works unfolding in his ministry. Prior to that statement, we find him providing miraculous drink, purifying the temple, teaching about the Father, healing a paralytic and a blind man, and feeding the crowds with bread, while also claiming that only his body could really sustain them. These works show him to be the good shepherd who gives life to his flock. In the next chapter, we see his central thread even more clearly as he raises his friend Lazarus back to life. Giving life and the nourishment characterize Jesus' ministry, beginning at the wedding at Cana and continuing into dividing of the loaves and the offer of the living water that quenches our deepest thirst. All of Jesus' deeds narrated by the evangelist lead to one great work that makes the Father's love known in supreme fashion. The cross manifests a love so great that would not hold back a beloved Son. For God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have eternal life. For God sent the Son into the world not to condemn the world, but that the world might be saved through him, John 3, 16 and 17. All the works of the Father, to feed, heal, purify, and teach, manifest his love and mercy, which the Son embodies in the sacrificial gift of his life. Death is the only way to life. This is the logic of the cross that turns the world's thinking upside down. If we cling to a life for its own sake, we will lose it, refusing to direct our actions to the true end in God. Jesus models how we should live, not embracing death for its own sake, but as a means of entering into the love that leads to true life. For this reason, the Father loves me, because I laid down my life that I may take it again. John 10, 17. The Father does not delight in a death of Son. He delights in a love unto death that becomes a means of life for those who will accept the gift. If we follow Jesus, we too will do the works of the Father. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who believes in me will also do the works that I do, and greater works than these will he do, because I go to the Father, John 14, 12. Reading the Gospels, we don't have to guess what these works look like. If Jesus came that we might have abundant life, our task is to lead others into it. This means to become the servant of those God had placed in our lives, witnessing to the truth through actions that embody our faith. Jesus gives the perfect example in washing the feet of his disciples. He explained its meaning, "A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." John 13:34-35. Lent invites us to engage the works of the Father with renewed vigor. Just as Jesus did all things for the Father, so prayer must come first, reorienting our lives, all our actions to God. A dedicated time of prayer each day enables all our actions to become works done on behalf of the Father, to honor him and make him known. Through fasting, we fight against the pride and material comfort that lead to works focusing on oneself. By embracing asceticism and penance, we battle the idol of self that crowds out works performed for God and neighbor. Finally, in almsgiving, we can feed those who hunger, not simply fulfilling a bodily need, but manifesting the love of the Father to them. The works of mercy as a whole become tangible expressions of God's presence to the suffering. Prayer, fasting, and almsgiving will help us to follow after Jesus, taking on the works he performed to make the Father known and to draw others to him. Demythologizing Some Recent Catholic History by George Weigel. The National Catholic Reporter recently saw fit to mark Cardinal Timothy Dolan's 75th birthday by perpetuating two myths, falsehoods really, about events in contemporary church history in which the Cardinal was involved. As it happens, I was too, so I'm in a good position to play the mythologizer. Myth number one. At the outset of the 2015 Synod, Dolan joined 12 other cardinals in signing a controversial letter authored by his longtime friend and eventual vociferous papal critic, Cardinal George Pell. The letter sent to the Pope on the Synod's first day casts suspicion over the entire gathering. Myth number one, demythologized. On Saturday, October 3, 2015, I was present when a group of Synod Fathers met to discuss their concerns about procedures for the Synod that would begin the following week. Most urgently, the rule book circulated by the Synod, General Secretary Cardinal Lorenzo Baldessari, did not seem to make provision for votes on propositions by the Synod Fathers, the method previous synods had used to register the bishops' considered judgments. Concerns were also expressed over the proposed composition of the committee that would draft the Synod's final report, which seemed skewed in one theological direction, and over the lack of time for open debate by the entire Synod. These concerns were not idiosyncratic. They were widely shared by the Synod members from around the globe. I suggested that a letter be sent to Pope Francis, politely asking him to ensure that there would be an open debate leading to real votes and a final report that accurately reflected the Synod Fathers' views. The group agreed and determined that the letter, which I helped draft, should be signed by cardinals only, Cardinal Pell having observed in his typically Aussie way that I'm supposed to be the bull who carries his own china shop around with him, urged that someone else be the lead signatory, and Cardinal Dolan immediately agreed. The letter was not authored by Cardinal Pell, although he agreed to give it to the Pope, personally and privately, on the Synod's first full working day. Everything requested in the letter was subsequently granted by the Pope, and the Synod was all the better for it. Not only did the letter not cast suspicion over the entire gathering, it saved it from charges of curious manipulation. The only people who seemed to find it controversial were those whose plans to drive the Synod in a certain direction had been thwarted. Myth number two. Further insult was added when in 2020, Dolan took out the unusual step of sending copies of a book reflecting on the next pope to all members of the College of Cardinals, a move viewed as bruta figura, bad form, by many on the receiving end. Myth number two, demythologize. The book in question was my small volume, The Next Pope, The Office of Peter and the Church in Mission, a brief description of the qualities I deemed necessary in a pope who would intensify Pope Francis's call that we be a church of missionary disciples. Cardinal Dolan did not send it to the College of Cardinals, Ignatius Press. The publishers did. The mailing included a one-sentence cover note from Cardinal Dolan that read in full, "I am grateful to Ignatius Press for making this important reflection of the future of the Church available to the College of Cardinals." Cardinal Dolan subsequently received one critical letter from a brother cardinal who, some while later, apologized. When new cardinals were named later in 2020, Ignatius Press sent the new members of the college copies of the book with another cover letter from Cardinal Dolan, which included the following. "I am careful to note that the book is not about candidates and is not a criticism of Pope Francis." The NCR story concluded with a crack about Cardinal Dolan's influence or alleged lack thereof in the immediate future. Well, since his translation to New York in 2009, Cardinal Dolan has been the face of the Catholic Church in the United States, a role he has played with a gracefulness and generosity of which his critics seem incapable. To walk with the Cardinal through Manhattan is to experience a city whose people know they have a bishop who love him for his warmth and friendliness and who in their various ways experience Christ through him. All the more reason then to clarify some recent history in which the Cardinal was engaged and in this Jubilee Year of Hope, to hope that one day such distortions of the historical record in aid of partisan ecclesiastical purposes cease. Catholic Therapist, Short Guide to Denver Dating by Dr. Michelle Connor Harris and Mark Sanders from St. Raphael Counseling. If you're a Catholic in your 20s, 30s, or even 40s and feel called to marriage, the team at St. Raphael Counseling, a ministry of Catholic charities, would like to offer some advice. My colleague, Mark Sanders, and I have been therapists for many years, and we've each other have been happily married to our spouses for 25 to 30 years. We often hear young people in our offices expressing frustration about dating in Catholic circles. Mark primarily works with men, while I see more women, but the concerns are largely the same. I've been to all the young adult gatherings. I'm part of a Bible study. My housemates have introduced me to all of their friends. I've been on Catholic Match. I even joined a Catholic sports team, despite being painfully unathletic, and I still can't find anyone. Many feel immense pressure to find the one as soon as possible. While the desire for marriage is natural and taking proactive steps is important, it's easy to become fixated on making it happen. In doing so, we can forget that God has a plan for each of us, one that may look very different from the one we envision for ourselves. Trusting God's plan, from my own experience and that of many of my clients, the person God has chosen for you may not be who you expect. When I met my husband, Chris, he wasn't Catholic. He was in Marine Corps ROTC program and from a completely different part of the country. These all felt like strikes against him because I assumed they meant we wouldn't share the same faith. He'd have a career in the military and we'd never live near my family in Colorado. But I brought my concerns to God in prayer. In my next conversation with Chris, without my mentioning any of my worries, He shared that he had no intent, no interest in long-term military career, had always wanted to live in Denver, and was open to raising children in a Catholic church. It was a clear moment of God removing my perceived obstacles. A few months later, we got engaged. A year after we married, Chris chose to convert to Catholicism. Now, with three nearly grown sons, I'm grateful I was open to God's work in my dating life. More than just shared faith. Mark here, my relationship with my wife, Aileen, started differently. She was Catholic, and I felt an immediate connection. But I remind myself when working with young adults that this isn't always the norm. Through years of counseling, I've learned that dating can be challenging, especially when people expect an instant, deep connection. I've had clients who knew each other's favorite saint, but not their hometowns. While faith is foundational, it's also essential to consider compatibility in other areas of life. In my marriage counseling work at St. Raphael's, I've seen couples who married primarily for religious reasons but later struggled. When the kids were grown, they realized they had little else connecting them. A shared faith is crucial, but so is a strong personal connection. Let go and let God. We encourage you to slow down, relax, and enjoy the journey. Dating should be a wonderful experience, not a stressful pursuit of the one. When you remove the pressure, connections can form naturally. Here are a few questions to consider. Are you truly surrendering your dating life to Christ? Surrendering means being open to meeting people from different backgrounds and allowing room for the unexpected. Instead of viewing every date as a potential spouse interview, see it as an opportunity to make a new friend. Some people you meet may introduce you to a future spouse, become an important professional contact, or help you grow emotionally or spiritually. Are you enjoying your life as it is? Dating should be fun. When you stop obsessing over whether someone is the one, you can enjoy the experience, whether it's sharing a meal, taking a walk, or simply having a great conversation. Take it one date at a time and don't be too quick to dismiss someone. We've all seen the bumper sticker, let go and let God. But do we really believe it? Give it a try this Lent. You might be surprised at what He has in store for you. Strengthened by the Spirit, Regional Black Catholic Congress draws faithful together in prayer and fellowship, by John Kerr. More than 150 people gathered in song, dance, and prayer on February 15 at Queen of Peace Parish in Aurora for the regional conference of the National Black Catholic Congress. In accord with the theme of Strengthened by the Spirit, attendees were lifted by the praise and worship songs of the African Catholic Society Choir and Roger Holland II, director of the Spirituals Project Choir. The music had the conference attendees in a mood for a great conference, said Floyd Boyard, Grand Knight of the Knights of St. Peter Claver, Council 261 of Kildare's Parish in Denver. Sheer joy and jubilation enveloped me as I entered the hall and saw so many beautiful and familiar black and brown faces in the parish center, said Carolyn Richardson of Annunciation Parish in Denver. I would be quite remiss not mentioning the euphoric faces of our supportive white friends also in attendance. There was widespread joy to be among so many unicorns of the Archdiocese of Denver, as Dr. Holland describes us. We were spellbound with profound pride as we watched the video of the entrance procession of so many black and brown faces of deacons, bishops, and finally our beloved Cardinal Wilton Gregory during the National Black Catholic Congress, the 23rd in 2023, she added. Sister Gail Trippett, CSJ, keynoted the conference with a talk entitled Strengthen the Spirit for Turbulent Times and Beyond. Speaking of both the turbulence in our society and personal life, she said, the power of prayer is to get quiet enough in our souls so we can hear the Spirit. She explained that the place to find God is in the present, as God revealed to Moses when he shared his name, I am who I am. After accepting this truth, one can release the need to be elsewhere, both in body and mind. Using various exercises, Sister Trippett showed how we all may see the same thing, but what we perceive can be very different. She asked all to consider what messages each has accepted about who each is, as well as how one considers the other, especially one who is difficult to love. Considering all these things, Sister Trippett said, makes for good discernment, which may include waiting, quiet time, music, exercise, an act of service and prayer, or meditation. The breakout session included Praying the Vision, the Rosary as a Means to Thrive by Kathy Holmes and History of the National Black Catholic Congress from its beginnings in 1889, its reestablishment in 1985, and its relevance for today by Barbara Wright Ingram and Margaret Wright. Seneca Holmes, who among with Samaria Stovall gave a session on engaging youth and young adults in liturgy. She also reported in his experience from the vast Congress in National Harbor and his opportunity to make the entrance procession video. When a youth see and interact with religious that look like them, it allows them to see a path forward for them to also consider the religious life, said Maria Rose of St. Ignatius of Loyola Parish in Denver. This event was a beautiful reminder of that most important mission we had, the showcasing of the African diaspora, from African Americans to Native Africans from the various countries, reminded me of the beauty of God's creation and His love of the diversity of humanity. For myself, it renewed an interest in speaking with young people, encouraging them to explore the possibility of a vocation to the religious life, a renewal of faith and the universality of Catholic Church with all its beauty and rich traditions. The event was spirit-filled as well as educational and very much needed at this difficult time in our country. The program exceeded my expectations in every way, exclaimed Kateri Williams, Archdiocesan Director of Black Catholic Ministry. The enthusiasm surrounding the event clearly illustrates the desire for Catholics to have increased opportunities to come together in prayer, praise, and worship in a cultural environment that acknowledges and celebrates the gifts of the heritage as brothers and sisters in Christ. The Denver delegation worked tirelessly to present a mini-Congress program that replicated our experience at the National Catholic Black Catholic Congress, and all reports indicated that by God's grace we succeeded. The day concluded with Mass celebrated by Father Austin Okigbo from the University of Colorado Boulder with concelebrant Father Joseph Cao, pastor of Cuadras Parish in Denver, and accompanied by music from the Cuadras Parish Choir. Get to know the Archdiocese's six new transition deacons. Archbishop Samuel J. Aquila ordained six men to the transitional diaconate on Saturday, March 1st, the last step of their journey toward priesthood. Meet Deacon Jason Dorito from the Shrine of St. Anne in Arvada. What are you most looking forward to about being a priest? I'm looking forward to witnessing God's action in the lives of His people, especially in the sacrament of confession. To tell us about one person, Clergy Ole, who inspired you to follow me, to follow the Lord more closely. Monsignor Michael Glenn inspired me to follow the Lord more closely through his teaching about intimacy with God, through Lectio Divina, seeing his absolute trust in Jesus' goodness to him, even in great suffering over the last month of his life, also had a big impact on me. What would you say to someone beginning to follow the Lord and his plan for their lives? The Father's plan for you is only one of his blessings. The Lord has called me to greater love by showing his trustworthiness and faithfulness by allowing me to leave seminary and return. The Lord, my allotted portion in my cup, has held fast by my lot. Thank you for joining us for Catholic News. My name is Chris Mihalik.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.